Studio Stories, Studio Stories.
A podcast reminiscing on Twin Cities dance history.
Stories are among our most potent tools. All stories are connected, new ones woven from threads of the old.
Hi, I'm Joe Crook.
And I'm Matthew Janjeski. Welcome to Studio Stories.
Today, our guest on Studio Stories, reminiscing on Twin Cities dance history, is Lori Van Wieren.
Lori has worked in the Twin Cities well over 30 plus years, needs little introduction, known as a choreographer, improviser, site-specific dance maker, and community leader. Her curation of shows, and notably Bryant Lake Bowl's 9x22, just recently ending after its 17-year run this past January. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. Hello, you two and everyone.
You have been such an active component for the arts here in the Twin Cities. I'm super excited to learn more about you and all of your experiences here in Minnesota and beyond. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about where you're from originally and how you connected to dance?
Okay, great. Well, I was born in Holland, Michigan, which is north of Chicago, but I grew up in Chicago. And I started, my family moved from Holland to the Illinois area, first to Rockford, Illinois, where I danced with the Rockford Youth Ballet. It sort of saved me. I wasn't good at school. We were moving around a lot. It just anchored me to take dance classes with this wonderful man, Gary Roberts, in Rockford. So that's how I started. I felt like it sort of saved me. And then we moved to my mother's old neighborhood, actually neighborhood where all my Swedish and Welsh ancestors were from in Chicago, on the west side of Chicago. We moved back there and we didn't have a lot of money. I couldn't go downtown to take ballet at Stone Cameron or anywhere fancy. So I did study at the Corner Ballet Studio with Miss Helene, who was quite a character and quite eccentric, which I appreciated. And so that's where I started dancing. Later in life, well, I was forced to go to a girls' Catholic school in the suburbs. And because every day after school, people would, there'd be fights and people would get beat up. And, so my parents wanted me to go to a school where maybe I would study. And they threw me into all the plays. The nuns at this Catholic high school thought that I should be in theater and kind of made me try out for parts and things. And I did that, and I started doing more visual art. I took art class because I wasn't, the greatest academic. And then I somehow got into the Art Institute of Chicago. And that's where I became interested. I wasn't dancing, but I became interested in performance art. It was a long time ago. And it was the first performance art class in the country. It was 1969. And obviously a lot had gone on in that period, in that arena. And I didn't go to a regular dance class or get really involved with dance until I moved to Minneapolis, which was in 1975, where I studied with, I ended up, again, I was here alone. I didn't have any family. I didn't know what I was doing. And so I dragged myself to Nancy Hauser Dance School on the West Bank, where, who's in there? Did it completely burn down? I think it burned down a few years ago. but it was also where Bedlam was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was above Palmer's.
Yeah, the Cedar.
Cedar, yeah. And it was an amazing school. I don't know, Matthew, if you know much about that era with Nancy.
You know, I'm learning so much through these interviews. It's been really amazing. I've always just known it on Franklin. So like even and all of that. Yeah.
I started taking a workshop there and then I just kept taking class. But Nancy, you know, was amazing. She was had danced with Hanya Holm, was in her company, was her main teacher. And then she opened her own company here in Minneapolis. And when I went there, the school was, the West Bank School of Music was connected. There were visual artists that showed in the galleries. And it was this really rich intermedia going on. And she taught, you know, composition, and she had a great group of teachers, but she taught composition and technique and improvisation. And I think a lot of people thought of it as being very kind of soft compared to, you know, ballet, what was going on. Yeah. But it was quite rigorous, you know, and there was a apprentice company. I was in the apprentice company with Ralph Lemon and Mary Good and a number of people that are still around. I mean, I think Derek Phillips was in the company also. A number of people you would know if I could just remember all their names right now. But anyway, so it was quite the place at the time. And at the state, so then all of a sudden I was with this around these modern dancers with wearing leotards. And I had already been to art school where I had seen, I was really into John Cage. I had seen Grand Union. I'd seen Merce Cunningham. I'd seen all these other people. And then all of a sudden I was in the middle of a dance studio with leotards on. And I thought it was a little retro, but I was like, and this was, yeah, in the 70s. And, but I needed it. I needed a way to work with my body. I needed to, I needed a skill, you know, with my body. And so, so I stayed there, and that's how I stayed there until I injured my ankle. It's a lot of, you know, it stopped me for a while, and I stopped dancing and got more involved with theater, a little bit of theater with, yeah. Okay. Ask me another question because I feel like I'm rambling.
No, not at all. There's so much I feel like I could go into here. So what, when did you, shoot, now I'm losing my train of thought.
I have a little bit of a question.
Yeah, Joe.
Just kind of continuing with your first impressions of the Twin Cities when you moved here. Uh-huh. What can you talk about, like, the scene in your, like, first impressions, like, as far as, like, did you see any shows or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good question. You know, yes. I mean, I saw dance shows after I started studying dance. But I also, one of my first jobs was working at the Walker Arts Center as a guard. So those people became my friends. There was a group of us that were all artists that worked, you know, in the galleries and in the bookstore and at the front desk. So that was my scene. So I saw everything that came in, you know. The first time I worked at night, you know, Merce was doing a rehearsal that I had to just sit there and watch. And then all of those, and Grand Union, like I was always, they said, okay, you're the dancer, so you'll be there when there are dancers there. So I did box office person for everybody that came to town. So Yvonne Rainer, David Gordon, you know, everybody. It was kind of amazing. And we were also... the Walker always set up workshops, so we were also able to meet these people and try to understand the work, and I know I integrated it into my work. But yeah, so there was like Nancy, I was doing Nancy Hauser and learning this German expressionism. And then I was working at the Walker and seeing all this new work that was being made and brought in. And as David Gordon told me, actually, when he came to a 9x22 a few years ago, he said, you know, Lori, because I was in awe of all these people, he said, you know, we were just doing work and the only place that would invite us was the Walker, you know, was out of New York. You know, it was first the Walker. And so we would all be excited about going there. Anyway.
And so, was that Susan Weil at the time there?
Susan Weil ran the performing arts program at the Walker. She, you probably know this, but she just volunteered and went to Martin Friedman and said, I want to bring people in, and I have some ideas, and he just let her do it. And that's how she started it. And she eventually, of course, you know, built up a whole department. But yeah, she, Twyla, and of course, you know, Suzanne, Twyla Tharp's work, Sue's Leg, is named after Suzanne. Yeah. So she brought everybody in, you know, music, and then she would have music at the Guthrie, poetry, Patti Smith. You know, she was quite amazing.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. How did you end up coming to Minneapolis? Was it on your own or?
Well, let's see. So, I had been married in art school as a performance piece, but we did get married. And we both needed a change, and we had friends in Northfield and at Carleton, and so we moved to Minneapolis, because at the time, you know, it was seen as this land of milk and honey, you know. And so, yeah, I moved here with a guy, and not long after I got here, I left, because that wasn't working out very well. And ended up staying. I just started working every day and making life for myself, and then dancing.
And were you making work right away as well, or was it really like focused on becoming a performer for others? Like, did you continue your performing art kind of?
You know, there was, well, I just wanted to take class. I mean, I didn't know you know, would end up being an apprentice or making work. I just want to first everything for the class. But I was hanging around with artists, visual artists, and all kinds of other artists. So making artwork then for me was more about performance. So I actually brought, you know, how I thought about things into the composition classes that I would take from Nancy and John Munger and who else? Tom Kantuck taught there then. So so I would integrate them into my compositions with dance. So, yes.
And where were you as the apprentice with Hauser? Were you guys performing? Like, what kind of venues were you performing at? Was it more so the studio or?
Mostly studio. But at that time, we did some outdoor things too. Trying to think about that. Mostly in the studio, you know. Because she had a black box, although with post, downstairs. And then upstairs was a bigger studio just for class. And then we would do performances on the weekends. Yeah. So, you know, to build myself, I didn't think of it as building a career, but I worked at the Walker like 50 hours a week, and I danced at Hauser's. And that's all I did, you know. And so you would take class, you know, two classes a day, and then you would rehearse at night, and you'd do shows or rehearsals on the weekends. So it was really full time then.
Incredible. And what were kind of other things happening in town? Were you pretty like zeroed in on what you were interested in, or just making a living working and practicing? Or
you mean in other dance going on?
Yeah, in the community here, were there other things that were like, wow, who is that, or what are they doing?
Well, you know, at the time, you probably know this, people were really, the companies were really isolated. So, you know, I did Hauser things, and Hauser was touring, and most companies were, because of is it CETA and other grants that were going on. I'm forgetting the programs, but so people were doing a lot of touring. I mostly saw things at the Walker, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That work and get a little bit of pay to do it.
Yeah. Do you feel like that Grand Union and that kind of aesthetic, or, you know, getting to watch Merce Cunningham in rehearsal and things like that, I definitely see it blended within the works that I've seen of yours, but, how is it that you kind of, like, how did you find your voice in making work, or what you were interested in? And because I know there's a lot of character development that you do. And
well, I have no idea. let's see. I think because I've gone through different stages, and I've done, when I first, early on, I did things that were, had no character at all. You know, I was into concept and not putting any character on things, such as they did with Grand Union and especially Van Rainer, and, you know, no star-studded anything. So I was into that for a while and found it really engaging. And then later I thought, wait a minute, I got into some mask work. I started getting involved with some theater companies. Performers Ensemble was a company I worked with for a while, and mask work. So that's where I get interested in character. Hmm. And how the character, the face and the hands work together. And out of that, I started creating characters, but I started mixing that with, I'm not sure what you've seen of my work, because some people will say, oh, you all do character work. And then, you know, I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I guess what I was going to say is that in the 90s, you know, farther along, I ended up working with Echo and Coma.
Oh gosh.
And I was in, lucky enough to be in a workshop of theirs, and I a lot of people were, and this is a funny thing. I was just taking the class, and I ran in late, and I sat on the side, on one side, with a bunch of other people, and I didn't know that they had said, if you now you're taking the workshop, but if you would like to be in the piece where you will be naked, sit on this side. And if you don't, sit on this other side. Well, I sat on the side that said yes. And after that workshop, Echo came up to me and said, so now, Lori, can you rehearse tomorrow at 9:00? And I was like, what in the world? And I was like, yeah. So I ended up being in this piece. And we were, so the next morning, do you remember Sage's studio?
No, I don't even know about this.
It was in the Weewa building downtown where Sex World was. Now it's redone. It's regentrified, but it was Sex World for a long time on Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where a lot of artists were, but Sage had this beautiful studio on the bottom. I found myself in that studio with Eiko and Koma, no one else. And they were like, okay, now take your clothes off and then do this. And I was like, okay.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, okay, I really like their work, so I'm going to do this. which was amazing. And I learned how to do that. And I worked with them with two other people in town. Sharon Faroche was in it. And okay. Marcella, she was Kingman at the time. I can't remember her name now. Marcella. Huh. Marcella. Anyway, she was at the Guthrie for a long time, teaching movement and now directing 10,000 feet. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And this was in the 90s, you said? In
the 90s, yeah.
Where was this performance?
At the Southern Theater.
Oh, my gosh.
With the whole floor of the Southern was red, and we danced and performed in 4 inches of water.
Wow.
It was, and there was water dripping down the back, and the lights were amazing, which you have to have if you're naked.
What do you know the title of this work by chance, or?
The piece that we did was called Canal.
Okay.
But they worked it into something else. You could find it on their website or in the book.
I actually just read, what am I reading? It's a bunch of choreographers, and I just was reading Eiko. It might be Rain. It's sounding.
She, like, it's, yeah. I they renamed it. Now, I can't remember if it was Rust or maybe it is Rain. I can't remember. I have to look it up. But I learned so much from her, and I'm still in touch with her, and, you know, if you just feel a great connection because she is such an amazing person and such a good friend. But I learned so much. Yeah.
And what was it that you learned?
One of the main things that I always bring with me is this, and this is also comes from working with masks, but the idea of having a split attention, where you sense yourself in the piece and you know, doing the work, doing some deep internal work, and at the same time your attention is at seeing what it is from the outside. And you know, I can't really stay with that very long, but it is a great thing to focus, that helps focus me, but also it gives me something to reach for.
When you kind of go into making work, do you always kind of start with a specific goal for the process of that work, or do you feel like it's kind of variant? Can you talk about that a little bit, mm-hmm. if that makes sense?
Well, yes, it is variant. I mean, sometimes you know, it can be this very internal thing. I feel this. I really have to make this movement. And sometimes somebody will ask you to do a project to fill a certain space. And I enjoy doing both of those. And what else? And sometimes it's like, I have an idea. What if we did this? And sometimes, you know, you go in a room and it's like, I don't know. I'm going to make a dance and I have no idea what's going to happen. And then I look for some spark that makes me want to move, that makes me want to do something, or looks like something. Like there's a question there and I don't know what it is. So I'm going to try to figure it out.
So the piece really leads you, kind of like you might have an idea or you might not have any ideas, but you're following like the process basically.
Right. Following the process, but following something else, like what needs to be done right now in this space, like what is needed. So somehow I worked myself into doing, so I've done small cabaret things. I have done some concert dance, and I have done larger, more community-based work. And so those are all different ways of looking at dance in the world.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matthew.
No, you go, Joe.
I know I'm jumping into it, but, you know, 9x22, for me, was one of the first places or platforms that I experience where we got to talk about work in progress, you know, and that was one thing that I've always been kind of really interested in from your perspective. I mean, you know, 17 years of seeing work in progress, how that would affect, I think, the way you think about art making and also your own process. Can you talk about that experience maybe in reflection?
Yes. Yeah, that specifically, I can't tell you how much I've learned about making work and intention and what I want to see in my work, what I want to see other people do, or trying to take my vision out of it. I don't know. So it's 17 years. Would it be all right if I just talk about how I started it, and then I'll go into
definitely
what affected my work. I looked around, and you know, Matthew, you were here. There wasn't very much going on as far as works in progress and also talking about work, and I thought it should be done, you know, and then it's like, oh, I guess I should do it because I think that's important. I got part of the idea from doing back in MICA, Minnesota Independent Choreographers Alliance, where we did these events, and now Patrick was so involved, and it was before he started the cabaret. What did we call them? Oh, potluck performances. Oh. The audience would bring food, and then maybe five people would show work, and you didn't have to be in dance. It was film and poetry and whatever anyone wanted to do. So that's where I started doing something like this, and then we talked about the work afterwards. So I don't know. I always just wanted to know how people made work themselves. And I was interested in all different kinds of ways of making work. And so when I looked around in 2003, I looked at this space that KVL and Arwin and Susan Scalf and all those people started performing it in on that stage. And I went to Kim and said, I'd like to start a place where people could come and show work and then talk about it. And then I started in, and it was kind of scary because I wasn't someone who really spoke much in public. It scared the hell out of me. It was like, oh shit, I have to talk. What the hell? But I did it, and I started learning how to do it. I wanted, like, anybody who made work, who said, I make work, I make dance work, I make movement, I could show their work. So it wasn't just, you know, a certain style. And that was just important to me, to find out about all ways of working. I'm trying to, so that's a lot. Anyway,
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That, and I think the perseverance of that investment, you know, of always like always knowing, okay, yeah, 9x22. And I think for me in the studio, especially when I was, you know, 10 years ago, just first coming into Minneapolis as a dancer, like mm-hmm. trying to figure out where to make work and what mm-hmm. to have the purpose of making work. Mm-hmm. And 9x22 was always like the first, one of the first things we said, well, we could always, you know, try and give it a run, you know?
I know. And I love that people thought that. And a lot of people that enter town, you know, enter the dance scene here, will say that, which, you know, I didn't realize I was doing that right away. But then I started reaching out more when someone would come to town and saying, oh, you know, why don't you show something? You know, I don't. And I do think it's important to have a place where anyone can show work. And yeah, you know, we've had brilliant people perform on that stage who are in, you know, deep into their work. And the beginners are brilliant also, I'm just going to say. But
yeah, I think it was a nice platform for, like, also getting to see outside national artists when they did come to town and perform. I mean, there. It was,
yeah, Akon Koma performed on that stage.
And, oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and last year, oh God, you know, this aging process, that forgetting names is a kind of a problem. yeah, and it was great. I would try to leave space for people. Like I could have filled it, you know, like I could have filled the whole year, like pretty much right away, but I would kind of hold back. And at first I thought, oh, I'm being kind of lazy. And then I thought, no, this is good, because if you have a new work or if you've just come to town, I can put you on the bill. And so I tried to, you know, play it that way. And it was, which is sometimes a little stressful, but I think it was the right thing to do. And I think it's affected my work in that I don't know, you know?
Well, I feel like I just saw a post maybe that you shared on Facebook that you were making some dances in your living room. So,
oh yeah, that. Well, I always have. I used to. Well, it's the only space I had, so I made Your Dog's Gonna Like This, which is a quartet. It's like a very tightly choreographed collage of gestures. Very specific. It was when I had a company called the Be Specifics, and that was made in my living room, and it was the size it was because of my living room. And then I realized recently I'm doing it, especially with COVID, you know, people don't have studios, that I was starting to rehearse in my living room again. Yes. But by myself, which I think, well, I'm doing right now, not as much as I'd like to be, but solo work, improvisational work, which I feel like in this day and age and where we are now, and wanting to support Black dancers, people, I feel like I can be responsible for my own improvisation and then also invite other people to come and bring their own kind of dancing to it rather than me telling them what to do. So that's what I'm thinking about working now. And then the other way I'm working is outside, you know, outside. I have a show that is coming up in October, maybe, at Silverwood Park. And I think no matter what, I'll be able to do that show because I can. I will have to choreograph the audience for social distancing, but it'll be part of the piece. So I think I'll still be able to do that. And that's going to be under a full moon where I can also light it. So I'm excited about that. But those two ways of working feel like what I can do right now. And I think all of the work that I do is affected by what I've been around and been able to discuss in 9x22.
Yeah. And I can't, how cool is it to, you know, be that maybe first or second draft of something at 9x22? Do you have some memories of like following the process of a piece from there and then it's like final production somewhere? Or do things stand out to you from that, a highlight or two?
Well, I think, you know, Morgan certainly performed there a number of times, and she just mentioned this. She did something at 9x22, and then it ends up, you know, I can't be specific about that, what piece she was talking about. But I think there are a number of those things, and also a number of people meeting people in that room. Like, I actually remember her connecting with David White. Right? Like, I was in the middle. David was on my right. Morgan was on my left. And they, I think they must have known each other, of course, but they really connected there in front of me. And then she had a, you know, show wherever he was producing work at that time. So I remember that sort of thing where people met and connected and then started working together. Yes, I think there's a lot of that.
That's interesting. Yeah. I can't think of a place right now that kind of fills that, you know, more, I guess, casual kind of connection. I mean, pre-COVID, I guess.
No, I know. And I think we need it. I think we need it in maybe different ways. I mean, one of the reasons that I ended it finally, I mean, every year I would say, okay, am I going to do this again? Does the community need it? Do I want to do it? And I kept going and kept going, well, okay, it's okay. I can do it. And I loved doing it. And I did. I learned so much about making work and just human beings. But I thought that what I did in the last, I don't know, maybe 5-8 years, I really worked on bringing more people of color, more people that maybe couldn't perform anywhere else, into 9x22, or and I it was doing not, you know, it wasn't enough, but I was trying. And then I realized that there should be more people of color running these things, and that's not me. And I also think the process of doing 9x22, the way it has been kept going, is not sustainable, even though it did go for 17 years, but it's only because I volunteered. It wasn't funded by anybody except, of course, you know, the Bryant Lake Bowl allowing us that space. They don't charge you for it. They give you a lighting person. Of course, they make money off of people that come in, and you get a small cut of the door to pass out to the performers, and then I would take some for myself, and I would pay the videographer and pay for my admin. And that's how we ran it. And I at one point, Jerome came to me and said, the Jerome Foundation came to me and said, oh, Lori, well, what do you think? Can we support you? And I looked into it, and a couple things would have to happen. I would have to, you know, decide who was emerging. Who was emerging and who was not. And I wasn't willing to do that. And the fee that I would get for the admin wouldn't really be enough to make it worth my while. And I would have to do things that other people said I should do. So I said no. And then I thought, okay, well, every once in a while I would think, oh, I should go to MRAC and get a grant this year, or go to State Arts Board and maybe get a grant this year. And I thought, well, that is not sustainable. You know, so I just never did it. So not getting funding for 9x22 was a really good thing and a really bad thing. Really good in that I could do whatever I wanted to, and that's why it kept running. It was kept running. But then, two, I wasn't engaged in money making for it, and that's a bad model, I think. And it's what we've perpetuated in the dance world for a long time. And anyway, so that's what I came to and why I stopped. And then I was tired. It was like, we need new models. We need something else. And we need to support communities of color in the dance world and try to figure that out. I don't know how to do it. And I am struggling with that and struggling with knowing how to support the dance community also.
Yeah. I feel like you and I have
similar passions. I know. And we should.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to. It's like I can't stop myself.
Yeah.
But it is definitely trying to figure out, you know, steps to be taken. How can we be listening and supportive of those communities to be able to, you know, assist in any way, you know?
And for me, it's also, how do I make work that, who am I making work for? And how do I make work that is, that makes sense right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's why I ended 9x22.
It's interesting to me though, because it really was the, you know, people knew it was happening, and it was the place where the community itself actually had a place to convene.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I know that was hard for me to come to terms with. And I think it also happened, it became more important because all these other spaces went away.
Mm.
And I thought, well, you know, this should not be an excuse not to build other things.
Yeah.
I remember, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, 10 years ago, when I realized, being on panels and then talking to other people, that people were using footage, video from 9x22 to get grants. You know, and I was like, oh, okay, wow. Well, that makes me kind of sad that this is the only venue, one of the only venues for that. I mean, I understood what happened, but it's anyway, I think we need to build other things. And I think that, you know, you're doing some good things with, you know, doing work at the Southern and keeping your work and your festival going. I think that's a good, that's certainly a good thing in town.
Thank you, Lori. You know, this is reminding me a little bit of kind of going back now. I have memories of your voice being powerful and strong in the community back in the days of the MICA into Minnesota Dance Alliance and later Dance Today. Was it called Dance Today at some point?
Yeah, I was not around for Dance Today. I was out of there. You know, you were involved in the Dance Alliance for a while, right?
Yeah, it kind of became my, I was in college and I was like, there's so much more happening outside of the college campus at the University of Minnesota that I was talking to someone of like, yeah, I used to just go there and hang out to see the amazing people that were doing stuff. Even administratively, you know, on that front of like what's happening in the community. And so, yeah, what was your involvement in, and I believe that you're...
I first joined, in the early 80s. That's when I first started making work. And then the Dance Alliance, the Minnesota Independent Choreographers Alliance, MICA, was meeting. And so the first meeting of MICA was a group of 11 choreographers. Some of them are still around here. And then I probably joined when maybe there were like 45, 50 people, and we would meet once a month. And then we became a membership. We would put our dues in. I was just a member for a long time until actually one point, a few years later, they needed somebody to be treasurer. And they looked at me and said, "You should be treasurer." And I was like, "No, I should not be treasurer. This is not something I should do." And they absolutely like insisted. And it was like, "Oh, for God's sake, I am so dyslexic. What are you doing?" So I did become treasurer, but then it turned out the office people did all the work and I just stamped the checkbook. Thank God. So, you know, I was involved in different ways, but mostly, as a choreographer, as a helping produce shows and things like that. Cause we had 6A, which was what, they still call it 6A, right?
I think people know it as that. Maybe.
Oh. I don't know.
And then Minnesota Dance Theater obviously took over the space after.
Yeah. And so there was a theater and we put on shows and I helped with all that. And I was lucky enough to get some grants, which was sort of shocking to me because for the longest time people said my work was not dance. So I was always shocked when I got any money for it. And then I would make a piece. I mean, I'm sure this is how you might have done it, but I would get a grant and then I would make a piece and then it'd be it, you know, and then I would take class and work with other people and then I wouldn't make another piece except for a solo until I could afford it. So I never went in debt, which a lot of people did have and continue to. But I kind of regret not pushing myself in a way. I did a few things in New York, showed some work in New York, but I never really, I think sometimes I was just too shy, you know, or not confident enough to really make big pushes with my own work. You know, I think that's kind of a common thing for some females. Be able to produce and promote other people and easier than their own work, my own work.
Yeah. I feel like for myself even, you know, like, well, how do you have, yes, I graduated with a BFA in dance, but there's no card that says you're a choreographer. I don't know.
I know.
Yeah. And you're just trying to make work and investigate things and, oh, people are interested in this. Okay. You know, I don't know. I think I can understand that point of view.
The first piece that I ever made, I'll just tell this little story.
Yeah.
I was working at the Walker and I was taking class and I wanted to do some improvisation and combine my performance art sensibility. So I had all my friends at the Walker come to my class and we started improvising and we made this piece. You know, it's like, oh, there's a there's a work there, you know. But then I just kind of tossed it off. And then when I was out of town, my friends went and auditioned for the choreographer's evening. And they told me, they were like, we auditioned that piece for the choreographer's evening. and I was like, okay. And I got in. And it was like, okay, I like this. This is fun, you know. But that's when people started calling me a choreographer. Hmm. I remember Linda Shapiro coming out and saying, where did you get those people? And you know, and I was like, okay, I'm a choreographer maybe. I don't know. But I didn't call myself that for years.
Wow. Anyway. That's a great story. And, you know, Lori, I know that recently you did a work, Temporary Actions Theory.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's good. I never remember the name.
Can you tell me about that work, though? Was that the work that was kind of a... Yeah, tell me about that work.
Well, let's see. I took pieces of work that I have done in the past and started creating a solo from... wait a minute. Where did it come from? Sorry. I first did a show like 15 years ago where I took all my video. It was called Who Made These Videotapes? And I looked at all my video and I had a gallery showing and a performance within it and did a solo in that, taking images from all the things that I was surrounded by and my past work. Well, a few years ago, I took that work and started building it out. And I had I had Barbara Berlewitz come and work with me as a mentor. I had Judith Howard. I had Pramila Vasuvaran, and just to help me work, because you know how it is working on a solo. You can't see yourself very well. So I had them help me work in different ways because I had done very kind of work in different styles. So I combined all of that. But it was also a tribute to the Southern and my relationship with the Southern, the physical space. So it was about that. And I really like to work with architecture and how I'm conversing with the architecture that I am within and the people that are in the audience. Like those are I feel like when I'm improvising, dancing, that I am in communication with and I have a form that I follow, but really I'm in communication with the space and the people. So that's what I did in that solo. And the temporary action was about the Southern and the whole idea of a performance space being temporary, as they have been, you know, forever, and especially in the last few years for all of us. So that's what I was working with.
Nice. Was it performed at the Southern?
It was.
Oh, it was. Okay.
You know, there, I didn't have much of a grant. I had a $10,000 grant from State Arts Board. And Damon was still at the Southern. And he said, oh, here, do this on a Tuesday night. I won't charge you. So that's how I did it. And I did two shows in a night. And it was so great because I got to crawl around the crawl space above in the show.
Oh my gosh.
I was able to climb up the Heidi Eckwall did the lighting. So she of course let me do anything. You can't do this. I don't think you could do it now, but I'd climb up the lighting rigs and you know, it was great. I could do whatever I wanted to. It felt really cool.
I love it that you mentioned Heidi too, because Heidi Eckwall is just
amazing.
One of the, yeah, just so great.
Well, she's worked with everyone, concerts, dance around the world, and then, you know, the smallest rough and tumble pieces around, and she's just fantastic at both.
Yeah, yeah, I always appreciate her different perspective on things of in setting and lighting, and yeah, just so great. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so awesome to chat with you, Lori. There's so much more I don't know about you that has always fascinated me in a way, because we have been together in this community for so long, and
I know
I see the great work you're doing, and really, really appreciate your care and focus for this community. It really shines through. So,
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today as well.
Thank you for doing this history. This is very important, and I listened to three of them. I didn't listen to Rosie's yet, but they're good, and it's important that we get some things down, and I hope I made any sense at all.
Awesome, Lori. Have a great one.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for joining us today with Studio Stories. Next week, we'll be talking with Neil Greenberg, a former Merce Cunningham dancer and presently the professor of choreography at the New School in New York.